listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 433.
Hi podcast fans, and welcome back to the Outdoor Station with me, your host, Bob Cartwright. And an apology for rather a tardy delay, really, in getting out a podcast. I know I said the last episode that things would be a bit sporadic, but unfortunately things have been happening here at home, and unfortunately they've had a knock-on effect to other activities. So apart from the usual sort of work excuses, the biggest problem we've had is the fact that our septic tank has failed. Now, if anybody has experience of septic tanks, they know exactly what that problem can feel like. And those of you that don't have septic tanks and live on the mains and you just flush all your brown sticky stuff away, then life is sweet. But unfortunately, when it fails, you're rather in the brown sticky stuff. So it's taken a few weeks to get contractors sorted and get a new system and get a new treatment plant organised. So that will be happening very soon. Now, also things that are happening very soon, we have got the Backpackers Club annual general meeting this weekend, and they have a little show and the backpacking light. We go up there with a van full of stuff, and we will be doing that leaving, well, tomorrow afternoon, actually. So that van is semi-packed at the moment. So we've been doing that, and we're also doing the usual sort of shop stuff as well. So one thing and the other, with springtime happening and things moving forward, and the weather changing and everybody wanting everything now, the hands have been somewhat full. So the new bit of news, really, and the reason I'm sort of wanting to do this podcast to introduce things, is the fact that last year I mentioned that I would be doing the Two Moors Way, and that is a walk from Wembury near Plymouth up to Lynmouth, across Dartmoor and Exmoor and the bit in between, which is approximately 117 miles or 120 miles, depending who you talk to. I suppose it depends if they go to the pub halfway across or something. Anyway, I was intending to do that last year come, I think it was September time, or yeah, September, October time. But if you were a regular listener, you will remember that I mentioned doing the trip, but I had to cancel, unfortunately, because the house purchase was going through. And again, anybody that knows what that's like, you don't want to be away when things need to be signed and all the rest of it. The I's dotted and the T's crossed. So I had to cancel. So I bought the tickets again. And once I get back from the backpackers event up in Derby on Sunday, I'm packing furiously and heading off on Tuesday morning, first thing, down to Plymouth, with the aim of actually getting started Tuesday afternoon from Wembury and heading up from the coast, doing a little bit of a cross-country path by looks of it on the Plym Trail before it officially joins the Two Moors Way. And the Two Moors Way is officially from Ivy Bridge, which is a bit further on, as I say, to Lynmouth, but they've sort of linked it all together. So what I thought I'd do is, because I know guys are interested in, you guys are sort of interested in the sort of preparation and kit and sort of this sort of stuff, give you a bit of background on what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and obviously, as I do it, I shall be doing one of my regular diaries, just like we do with the TGO Challenge. And I'm also going to do a video as well. So I'm going to take my time to try and record the trip. When you're doing the TGO Challenge before, I have mentioned it, but really you're concentrating so much on getting from A to B in a good time that actual stopping to make films and record lengthy interviews and that sort of thing are actually pretty tricky. So that's why you have to do everything on the hoof. So that leaves me to where I am at the moment, really, which is looking out at the bed, which is covered in my assorted equipment. Now, this particular trip, I wanted to make it a lightweight tarp and bivy job, because it's a while since I've done just a pure tarp and bivy or just a pure bivy trip, and I thought it was about time that I cracked on to do that. So I thought, however brief this podcast turns out to be, I thought I might just give you a bit of a rundown of what I'm taking with me and some of the reasons. And just to sort of set the scene, really. Now, the weather's been pretty good. We're certainly going into springtime in a great way here in the UK. And the weather forecast for the last week has been really dry, pretty well across the nation, but in particular down in Devon. So I'm hoping that when I eventually get to Dartmoor and then across to Exmoor, then that good weather, positive weather, will be with us. I don't mind a bit of rain, but obviously absolutely sodden and wading through mud is just no joy for anyone. So how am I approaching this? Well, I'm approaching this with various bits of gear, some new gear, some things to give them a good try and a good good experience, and test my mettle. It's a while since I've been sleeping under hedges, so I'm going to share it with you. In fact, if anybody's listening and going to be in the Dartmoor Exmoor area and know the Two Moors Way, I'm setting off next Tuesday, and I'm going to be Lynmouth the following Wednesday at the latest. I may be there by Tuesday, so I'm sort of giving myself 7 days, I'm doing my best to cover it at a reasonable pace. So if you want to join me for a wild camp, then you know what to look out for. So let's have a bit of a run through of the kit that I have decided to take with me, which is basically a scaled down version of the kit that I do for something like the TGO. So the first bit of equipment that I'm actually trying is the new Gossamer Gear Silverback pack, which I'm holding in my hands at the moment. And it's a pack which they're pitching between the Gorilla and the Mariposa. And it's got a floating lid or removable lid, depending how you look at it. And once I've got the pack packed, I'll decide whether to keep the lid on or not, because I'd like to save a bit of weight. The pack is sort of heavier than I'd like it to be, but of course it's got the frame in and all the rest of it. So again, I may remove the frame once I'm sort of established as regards the pack is packed. You know what it's like, you lay all the stuff out until you actually sort of get it together the day before. You don't really know how it's all going to go in. But anyway, we'll see how we get on. So, my wearing clothes. Well, let's go over the waterproof clothes. I'm trying the new Montane Spine clothing. So, I've got the Spine pull-on smock. I love smocks rather than jackets. I find jackets sometimes a little bit bulky. And what I like about the smock, and this one in particular, is so light. It's brilliant. That it lacked almost like a wind shield as well. So, I expect to be wearing that pretty well all the time, except if it's sunny. Then I've got the Spine trousers as well, waterproof trousers, which actually will be replacing my normal Gore-Tex ones that I've had for years, the lightweight Gore-Tex ones from Berghaus. These Spine ones are, in fact, lighter, and obviously they're new as well, so they will get a good thrashing should the weather turn on us. Pole-wise, I'm using the new, well, I say new, it's new to me because I've not used these before, the Trailblaze, the carbon poles, the Sky Runners. Now, I've used the alloy poles for many years, I'm going to use the Sky Runners just because I can, because they're light, because they're incredibly strong. And I went out for a tarp experience in the garden the other night just to test everything, and they're rock solid holding up a tarp. So I'm looking forward to putting those through the paces. Actually, looking through some of the clothing, I'm going to sound very Montane-y. I must admit, it is my sort of favourite manufacturer, really, of clothing. So I've got sort of a cap to go underneath the hood of the Spine smock, because obviously it's not a wired hood. Montane overmits, really lightweight overmits that I've picked up, and some old stickies, which are my general sort of wet weather gear. I've also, where are they? I've also got these old Rab event gaiters, which they don't make anymore. They stopped making these 2 or 3 years back, and everybody loved them. They were absolutely brilliant, and these have seen a few miles, but they're still going strong. I just keep replacing the shock cord. I'll need those on the boggy ground, and certainly obviously with ticks and that sort of stuff in mind. I'd like to cover up my ankles to stop encouraging the little critters to climb up your legs. And now, clothing wise, You guys, have you heard of Embers Merino? It's a British company that's been making merino, shirts and clothing and jackets and that sort of stuff for, about 10 years now, 10, 12 years. It's sad news to say that they're actually now closing down and they've got the last few items on their website, embersmerino.co.uk, I think it is. So if you want a bargain and enjoy merino items, then have a look, see what's left. But I love their stuff. It's sort of cheerful merino t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, etc. But the cut's really good. And very much like chocolate fish, bright colours. And they used to do some fantastic patterns and graphics on them as well, just to cheer up the sort of base layer. But anyway, I'm holding a Embers Merino t-shirt, which is going to be my main shirt. A buff, obviously. Montane beanie. The X socks, which I particularly like. The Treklite socks, which I love. They work really well with my Innovates. And the Montane trail pants. The long trail pants. So, again, if the weather's cool or I'm concerned about ticks, I should be wearing the trail pants. But in my spare clothing... let's go into the spare clothing bag. And underwear-wise, I'm wearing an old pair of Vaude synthetic pants, which are really good, actually. So my spare clothing in this dry bag consists of a pair of shorts, another pair of socks, a spare pair of pants, and a long sleeve... that's the Montane Primino. So it's the long sleeve with the zip neck. Again, very comfortable. More of a athletic fit than the Embers or the Chocolate Fish. And I have to say that I need to do this walk to get back to my athletic shape. I seem to be built for comfort, not speed, at the moment. Anyway, moving on. So that was my spare clothing. So it's just basically another shirt, pair of pants, pair of socks, and a buff. And I think that's about it, really. Then my insulation layer is a Rab generator smock. Again, something I've had for many years. And I'm taking a synthetic insulation layer this time because the sleeping quilt that I'm using is down, and I just like to give myself a belt and braces just in case things get wet unexpectedly. Now, the sleeping system I'm using a I've got the Alpine quilt at the moment, which is the Thermarest Alpine quilt. That's now been replaced by the Chorus, and hopefully if the Chorus arrives before I go, I will be taking the Chorus quilt with me. And giving that a blast as well. I've used the Alpine many times in three-season use, and certainly with if you get cold, you know, an extra layer of insulation is plenty warm enough. But of course, once this is inside the bivy bag, that uprates it anyway. So I know I'm going to be fine with that. Certainly with the weather, as it could go down to freezing, it's no problem at all. My ever faithful Thermarest Neo Air, full length. I can't lie on the short version. Unfortunately, it makes me twist my hip, which gives me a back issue. So I have to have the full length version. But that will be going down the spine of the rucksack behind the foam padding. And that saves a lot of space inside the bag. And then the shelter system. So I'm taking a backpacking light solo tarp, one of my tarps, with a dozen pegs, four lengths of cord, and a bit of shock cord, I think. That's all I'm taking for that. So that's the shelter, so that fits in my hand. That's brilliant. The bivy bag is the one that people may remember I mentioned when I did the last TGO challenge. It was a prototype that I had made, and I'm still considering taking this a stage further. A lot of people have asked for a bivy bag that's roomier than the current offerings. The current offerings are very, very close to a mummy sleeping bag. In other words, once you're inside the bivy bag with your sleeping bag, there isn't room for anything else. And that may be what you need. However, a lot of people like me want to use a bivy bag under a tarp or a shelter like the Mountain Laurel Designs, the Trail Star or something. that actually just gives the bivy bag, just gives your sleeping system, uprates it, but also protects it from moisture and obviously condensation. So this bag is made from a very lightweight waterproof base. And it then has, it's two-layer Gore-Tex, actually. I managed to get some two-layer Gore-Tex for the upper. I've got sort of a good window of mesh, and then what I wanted was headroom so that behind my head I could actually put a small pack, or, you know, valuables or whatever, so they're actually zipped in with me. But the actual pack, it's the actual bag itself is suitable for me to put the Neo Air in, which of course is the 2.5-inch thick mattress, plus me and a sleeping system, a quilt or a sleeping bag, and I've still got space inside to get undressed if I need to. I can actually reach down. Part of the reason for that is I've made the chest area very, very wide, which works for me, but also the zip, rather than the zip stopping and starting at shoulder height, the zip actually goes virtually down to just below my backside. So it actually allows you to sit up completely if you need to, but your feet and everything are still inside the bivy bag. Anyway, it's been a really practical design for me and worked really, really well. So I'm hoping that will obviously do the job. If it doesn't, well, we'll soon know about it. Moving on, first aid kit, just a small first aid kit in one of the little Ortlib waterproof bags, sort of the usual range of things in there, really. What would you take for a walk like this? Well, it's going to be blisters, if anything, minor cuts, possibly, tablets, headache tablets or whatever. I don't know, what else would you take? So that's all that's in there, really, some plasters and that sort of stuff. My wash kit, yeah, I was in two minds about this. And I suppose, thinking about it, I've been watching a few YouTube clips about some of the people that are going on about doing their ultralight trips, and I think that's great if you've got the weather for it and it's consistent weather, which they do appear to have. A lot of these guys that do the ultralight trips do have very consistent weather. And so consequently, they think take things right down to the basics, and they don't need additional insulation or additional waterproofing, shall we say, because they don't have to face it. And the same goes for wash kit and that sort of stuff. So two things I've got. I've decanted some Gerwall foot balm and refreshing balm into two little Nalgene pots because I like to look after my feet. So that's in my wash kit. I've got the MSR super lightweight towel thing, which is really useful for a whole variety of reasons. I've got a small offcut from an old towel, which is going to be my flannel, should that need to be the best way to wash. A small toothbrush, small toothpaste, and I was in two minds about it, but I'm taking... Oh, yeah, I meant to mention this. I'm taking a wonderful flat razor. He says, looking for it. Where is it? So flat, I can't find it. Yeah. This was, we used to sell this product when we first started, 10, 12 years ago, Avid Flat Razors. And it was fantastic for backpacking. It had four razors in the handle, and the handle is flat, it unclips, and you clip the razor to the handle itself, and away you go. Now, one of the last customers we sold these to was, we only realised when the packaging had gone out, was Gillette. And I have a feeling that Gillette put a cease and desist order on them and they stopped making them because I've not seen them since. But they were the business, and a good razor too as well, for that matter. So it's a real shame. But if you ever see Avid razors, and it's like a little flat plastic unit, let me know, because I'd love to stock those again because they're just the business. But as I say, I have a feeling Mr. Gillette did a cease and desist. So, coming back to the super lightweight and lightweight. I'm approaching this, I'm going light on this one. I think I'm skipping a few luxuries, but there are certain things that I don't want to skip. From my point of view, I do enjoy the camping experience. So I don't want to be flogging myself to death walking quickly, and then going right to dark, dive into the back. It's sort of defeats the object of the pleasure of it, really. I mean, there's got to be some pleasure. And so the cook system is possibly heavier than people who want to go really light would like to do. But think about this. If you say, for example, if you're doing an ultralight trip, you might say, well, actually, all I need is a little meth burner. Stormy Norman's setup, for example, a little meth burner, one of those collapsible windshields, and a, 500ml pot or a 700ml pot. Okay, so that's your cook system. And then you need a spoon, and perhaps that pot is your mug as well, so that saves you an additional item. But what are you actually cooking and eating, and how are you cooking it? So first of all, you need to take a bottle of meth with you as well, and you'll always take a little bit more just in case you need it. So that's another item you're taking. And then what are you eating? Well, you're not going to be cooking inside that system. That system is designed to get water boiling really, really quickly. So you're obviously boiling water to put it into one of the freeze-dried bags. So there's another pile of packaging and bits and bobs you're taking with you, and then obviously you've got the spoon or whatever to take the food out of there, and then you will have your tea and coffee or whatever it may be to drink out of the mug. So as light as that system is, it's good for boiling water rapidly. It's a bit like the fans of the jet boil, great system, fantastic, very efficient, great, really efficient on fuel, bit heavy perhaps sometimes, depending what you were comparing it to. But what does it do? Well, it boils water really, really well. It doesn't do anything else unless you buy various accessories. So this is a long way of coming back to what I've decided to do. I enjoy my food and I enjoy the camping experience. And part of the camping experience for me is a real fire. And, you know, there's the whole organic process of getting a fire going and keeping it going for an hour or so while you just think about life, really. So I have decided, of all the stoves that I've got, and I've got a few, to take a Solo, Titan Solo stove. This Titan Solo, is it Titan Solo? Yeah, it's one of the Solo stoves anyway. It's the little wood-burning stove. It's the copy of Fritz's stove, basically. The one that's spun out of spun aluminium, and although heavier than Fritz's stove, it is actually more sturdy and more solid. So I'm going down the wood-burning route. Now, the main reason I'm taking that stove, well, there's two. First reason is the one I've just described about the pleasure of cooking and enjoying camping with the stove. I'm also using a tarp as well, so that'll be nice to be able to camp under the tarp and use that, not worry about the ventilation and carbon monoxide. So I don't have to worry about that. But the other side of it is I'm obviously wild camping on this route. And legally, the only place you can wild camp is on Dartmoor. So everywhere else, I'm stealth camping. And in places, it might be on the edge of agricultural land or that type of property. So I really want to have a very, very low impact. I don't want people to see me. I don't want to disturb anybody. And at the same time, I want to leave no trace whatsoever. Now, certainly the shelter system will leave no trace, but obviously a wood-burning stove usually leaves a little burnt patch on the ground, or potentially can leave a little burnt patch on the ground, which is not a good thing to do. So the Solo stove is actually quite good because the base of the stove actually doesn't get too hot. So you can have the stove running for a bit and it doesn't leave a burnt patch on the ground. So that's the reason I've chosen that. And it also means, because of the nature of the route that I'm taking, apart from the open moorland area, most places I will be able to pick up handfuls of wind-dried fuel that is hanging in the trees, break it up, stick it in a bag and shove it in the side pocket as I potter along. And once again, I did a cook-up the other night, and literally a fistful of twigs was enough to bring the water to the boil and still keep it going for a good 15-20 minutes, just playing with the fire, really, which is quite nice. So this stove is inside one of the last Evenue pots that we had. We don't sell Avenue anymore, but I retained the one with the 1300mm pan, and it's the one with the deep frying pan lid. So the stove fits in there quite handsomely, along with my, I think it's spork or something that's in there as well, but a J-cloth probably. And that's inside a pot cozy. So the theory is I will enjoy my food. I'm dehydrating food at the moment, so I'm going to take probably about 5 days, 6 days worth of food that's dehydrated, just two meals a day. So that's a breakfast, which will be packet porridge breakfast, but I'll have some fruit dehydrated to drop into it. And that'll get me going for the day. And then in the evening, I'm having a big meal, which will be a pasta-based meal or a stew-based meal. So those are the meals. Now, the rest of the time, I'm hoping to pick up fairly randomly, it has to be said, because this route doesn't necessarily go through heavily populated areas. Food to keep me going during the day, pasty and that sort of stuff. But I also intend to pick up things like half a dozen eggs and perhaps a pancake mix, so that I might pick up half a dozen eggs, boil four of them to hard boil them, keep two for fresh for the morning, and get a pancake mix, and then mix up some pancakes and have a big fat pancake breakfast. Maybe I'll pick a banana up as well and mash a banana into it. So I enjoy my cooking, you see. So that's my theory, is that the pleasure of picking the fuel up as you go along means that you don't have to worry about the additional weight of alcohol, methylated spirits, or a gas canister plus a spare, because you always think you might run out. And I'm taking various cooking implements. And those cooking implements are, I've got a handful of Hamero Tinder card, which we sell. I've pulled off some strips of that, so if I get trouble starting the tinder, I'll use that. A little whisk and a little spatula and a little squirty thing of oil, should I need oil. I might have fried eggs and bacon. Ooh, and a roll, a ciabatta roll, and have a bacon egg sandwich. Maybe I should take some sauce with me. There's a thought. The Outdoor Station is your one-stop shop for audio and video entertainment for the self-powered traveller. You can find us online, on internet radio, on smartphones, on smart TVs, on YouTube, on Apple TV, on Now TV, and on Facebook. You can also stream us live via the iTunes app or TuneIn radio app. The list is continually expanding. And for full details of how to subscribe, download, or stream and enjoy our massive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk. So that's my cook set. So my cook set consists of the stove, the pan, various little cooking tools. I'm taking a MSR mug, and inside that I have got the Nalgene type screw lid pot, which I will be putting my dehydrated food in to rehydrate during the day as we go along. And then on top of that, again, this could be luxuries now. People could obviously say, well, it's not lightweight, but I'm taking one of the old Oracaso folding plates, which we used to sell a long time ago. They don't make them anymore, etc., etc. But this is really good because this disappears down the back of the rucksack in the hydration slot. And if you are to pick up various food for like a picnic type of thing, and you want to cut some cheese up, or you want to cut a tomato or whatever, and you don't want to do it on the ground and you've got nothing else to do it on, it makes a great little cutting board. And then obviously, should the food be, I don't know, mash in there, shall we say, and I tip water into it, I've got a plate that turns into a bowl. So that's really, really good. And then I suppose finally, water is going to be the biggest problem. Read all the guidebook and the maps, which I'll come on to in a second, but they all advise obviously not drinking stream water, that sort of stuff. So I'm taking a couple of litre platypus bottles with me, which I hope to get topped up during the day, either at, for example, a tap somewhere, a church perhaps, or a pub if I find a pub, or a cafe. And if I don't, I'm also taking a travel tap with me, because the travel tap will work with any sort of water, really, runoffs from agricultural, and it gets rid of all the pesticides and herbicides and that sort of stuff. So if I get stuck, I will use stream water and then decant it through the travel tap into the litre platypus bottle, so I've got that. Plus, of course, I'm going to be boiling water anyway for a fair amount of time, and I can do, because I've got the fuel, just to be doubly sure should I need to in those situations. But from what I've seen so far of the research that I've done, I think there's only a couple of places where I might struggle, and to be honest, I might just knock on somebody's door and say, would you mind, we'll see what they say. So yeah, I was mentioned the guidebook, which is down here. It's Cicerone guidebook, Walking the Two Moors Way. Author is Sue Vickers, and I've read that several times now, and it's full of useful information. There's also a website now that goes with it, which is quite interesting. But one of the things that seems to be happening, which is happening across the land really, is a lot of these pubs are closing, rural pubs. So there's a few places I'm thinking, oh, I might stop there for lunch, or, you know, top up with food or whatever. Actually, they're closed. So there might be stretches where I'm feeling a little bit hungry. So we'll see how we get on with that. And then the maps that I've got are the Yellow Publications map, Zigzag 25, laminated walking maps of the Two Moors Way. And I picked those up last year when we were down in Lynmouth, when I actually noted it for the first time. But it looks like we've got some fantastic land to cover and some really interesting history, some very interesting ancient stones, lots of standing stones. And so I shall be using the Cicerone guide as some reference to sound intelligent when I'm talking on the podcast. And you never know, I might get to meet people as I go along and we can have a chat. What's left? Well, what's left really is sort of the technical things, I suppose. The only thing I'm missing that I haven't mentioned, but I haven't decided whether I'm using them yet or not, is the Gossamer Gear, what do they call them? The shoulder strap pocket. It fits most rucksacks, but obviously it's supposed to fit the Gossamer Gear mainly. And it's just the right size for the recorder, and it's just the right size for the camera. But talking of equipment, this is where things start to get complicated. Now, so I'm taking my little Lumix camera, which has been fantastic, a good all-weather camera. I'm using the little tripod that I've used many a time, the little Ultrapod, which is a great little tripod with a rotating bevel head on the top of it. But also it's got a long Velcro strap, which means that you can strap it to things like your walking poles and, you know, a post or whatever it may be. It looks good to make the camera steady while you walk to it and walk away from it, which happens on a regular basis. Compass, obviously, got a compass, my sighting compass. This is part of the cooking kit, really. A little two-egg holder. Don't mock me. I like my breakfast. And then the rest of the gear that goes with it. I've got a twin USB charge, a plug, one of the folding ones. You can find them on, where did I get mine from? I think I got mine from eBay. It's great because it folds flat and so no pins are sticking out, which is the most important thing. And it's got two USB sockets on it, one of which will be charging the USB battery charger for the camera, and the other will be charging my iPhone. Again, and when I get to the cafes or to the pubs or wherever I can get power. The iPhone, I'm using the Route Buddy system, and I've tracked out the route on there, so I should be putting that onto my phone, hopefully when I get back from the Backpackers Club, and just to confirm some of the places that I'll be going through. I think the biggest problem that I have, and I know a lot of people do as well with navigating, is getting away from urban, trying to find the right route away from the street or the road to get you on the hill. And there's a lot of urban sections of this. So basically you leave Wembury, it's a cross-country walk through to Ivy Bridge. From Ivy Bridge you go straight up, proper as it were, onto Dartmoor. Then you skirt around Dartmoor a bit, do a couple of days across Dartmoor, and then is like a 30-day section between Dartmoor and Exmoor. And then once on Exmoor, there's I think probably one night on Exmoor probably. And as I say, it is stealth camping and wild camping, which is technically illegal anywhere outside of Dartmoor in Scotland. So my advice to myself and to anybody listening is leave no trace, camp late, leave early, and don't let anybody know you've been there. So please, tune in and join me for the podcast when I get back. I'm going to be doing a video as well, all being well. Hopefully all the technology will work. If it fails, then there won't be a podcast and I shall just have to ad lib it when I get back and explain some of the things that happened. But I do know people really enjoy the diary podcasts and recordings. And obviously along the way, if I get to meet anybody, other travellers, other backpackers, people enthusiasts about some of the burial sites and the standing stones, I'll possibly have a chat with them and spread the word and bring that to my audience. So I'm heading off for the backpackers tomorrow afternoon. Any backpackers listening to this, I'll see you in a few hours' time. And when I get back, I'm repacking my bag again and seeing if we can keep to the sub 8 kilo mark, which we should do fairly easily. I'm not really taking a vast amount of stuff. I think my biggest treats are definitely is the cooking equipment and possibly, I suppose you could say, the washing clothes and stuff. But then the technology. The technology is going to be a kilo. Can't be helped, unfortunately. Okay, guys, I hope you've enjoyed that. Sorry it's a bit of a ramble, I shall tune in and fill you in once I get back and hopefully get back to some more irregular podcasts to keep you informed. So wish me luck, and as I say, if you're in the Dartmoor or Exmoor area from the 25th of April 2017, then keep a lookout for a guy in a blue montane spine smock and come and have a chat. Be nice to meet some of the listeners face to face. Until next time, folks, take care out there. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk.